So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review, mate.
Right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
How could you have been so rude? That's Southern hospitality. How could you have been so rude? I mean, come on. I'm simply introduced and you people are booing. Why? Give me a break. Jerry Lawler starts running around the ring as I'm sitting at ringside. Starts running around the ring, trips over his own feet, points the finger at me, and blames me. I had nothing to do with it. Come on, Jerry Lawler. Then from there, you want to get in my face. Oh, your breath. You've got the worst case of halitosis. But you know what? Come to think of it, it smelled just like the Mid-South Coliseum. It smelled just like everyone in there smelled. I've never been insulted like I was this past Monday night. Never. And Jerry Lawler, you asked for it. And you got it. But you know what? You're asking for it again. You're asking for it again because come tomorrow night, you're really going to get it. Come tomorrow night when the hitman Bret Hart, the former World Wrestling Federation champion, steps into the ring with you inside a steel cage. It's bye-bye Jerry Lawler. No more king because you never really were the king. I mean, these Memphians really can't believe that you are the king of wrestling. And if you ever did believe Jerry Lawler was the king, you're going to find out differently. Because come tomorrow night, Bret Hart, inside a steel cage, will prove once and for all he is the undisputed king of wrestling. And by the way, as I think back to last Monday, I think about Jerry Lawler. I think about how he's been pulling the wool over your eyes here in Memphis for a long, long time. I mean, how gullible can you people get? Jerry Lawler says he's going to give you your money back if he doesn't defeat this poor pot-bellied referee and send him to the hospital. Whoop-de-doo. I'll tell you what, big mouth Jerry Lawler. Why don't you put your money where your mouth is? Come tomorrow night in the steel cage match with Bret Hart. Why don't you say the very same thing? Come on, tough guy. Come on, big mouth. Why don't you say, if I lose the match to the hitman Bret Hart, I'll give you your money back. Why don't you say that, huh? Well, if you do say that, Jerry Lawler, which I doubt you will, but if you do, I think you're in for a big surprise.
If you love somebody enough, you'll follow wherever they go. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. If you love somebody enough.
Welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting.
Yeah.
Wait, I feel we've talked a lot this week together.
Oh, jeez. I know. But it's been spread out over a whole week, though.
That's true. We haven't crammed it into, like, consecutive days or anything like that.
Yeah. No, nothing like that.
Well, if you can stomach me for another period of time, got a fun review coming up today.
I'm looking forward to this one.
An unconventional review. This is not a set event, but rather a entire, I guess, angle, a progression of an invasion sort of spread out over a very interesting time in WWF history.
Yeah. And through the magic of YouTube, and in particular the work of some random guy, what's his name? Like Pro Wrestling Stew or something on YouTube.
Who has compiled all of the key moments.
Shout outs to Pro Wrestling Stew on YouTube, whoever you are, for uploading these videos in 2007. But just think about how much of wrestling's history has been lost because it either hasn't been cleared or the ownership rights might have been lost somewhere.
Memphis being a perfect example.
Yeah.
No one can tell you who actually owns all of this.
Sure. Of things that just like never get that proper DVD collection release that we could be reviewing. So it's great that somebody took the effort out there to curate this collection.
It's a 30 videos.
30 short videos.
Yes.
That were essentially just the highlights of those specific weeks. The highlights from those episodes regarding the storyline.
Yeah. So, I mean, this has always been discussed upon, you know, Vince McMahon's first heel run, which was done here in Memphis in August of 93. And it didn't last very long, but definitely it was a precursor to what you would see years later and the explosion of the company with Vince McMahon as one of the key people as a reason for that and his heel character. So going back and watching this, my biggest question at the end of this way was how this didn't make it onto WWF television, Vince McMahon as a heel, until 98, which is amazing. When you watch this guy's the best heel in the business here in 1993.
I actually liked him more here than the Attitude Era Vince McMahon. He had a very different delivery, anyway, we'll get into it. But first, let's get into some background about the promotion itself and their working relationship between the USWA and the WWF at the time in 1993.
Yes, the USWA came out of the merger of sorts of the CWA, which was the Memphis territory, and World Class at the time when World Class was definitely in their plunging phase. And out of it came the USWA. And then there was the falling out with the World Class side, and the USWA effectively was just the successor of Memphis, which had been there a staple of Saturday morning television in Memphis forever. And on WMC TV. And at this time in 93, this was when Jerry Lawler had started working for the World Wrestling Federation as an announcer and kind of moonlighting at times in the ring, but still always maintaining his presence in Memphis because he was a co-owner of the territory along with Jerry Jarrett, who himself was also getting more involved with the WWF at this time as Vince McMahon would be going on trial the following year. So in 93, they had a 90-minute Saturday morning show, which aired in the Memphis market. And certainly the popularity wasn't what it once was in the 80s, but still a very loyal following and building each week to the Monday night Mid-South Coliseum shows. And they were also syndicated in Louisville, in Evansville, Indiana, and Nashville. And those were 60-minute shows they had as well. But the Saturday morning show, that was the big staple with Memphis wrestling, and the key being Jerry Lawler, who was the guy in Memphis.
Seemed like the only guy, really, if you're judging by these shows.
Well, you book the owner because he's not going anywhere, mm-hmm. even when he gets offers from the WWF, and he's going back and forth. But it was fun to watch this because, you know, I've watched sporadic Memphis throughout the time. But
we used to carry it on the Fight Network.
That's right. The later days of Memphis, actually, but also the classic stuff as well.
Yep.
Yes, the amazing as well, all the clearances they had for some of that commercial music, which even in 93, who would have thought that they were bargaining to get Michael Jackson songs?
And, yeah.
You know, lots of commercial music, even at a time when Memphis was not clearing the popularity peak that they once had.
It was the ECW rule, I suppose.
Yes.
On WMC TV, I don't know if Michael Jackson's estate is really going after.
Yeah, I don't know if the Memphis Brain Trust was looking ahead to future streaming rights and digital content when they were listening to Corey Macklin and such.
But this working relationship with the WWF, did it only occur because of Jerry Lawler's involvement with the WWF? Was there something more to it?
I think a lot of it was just it was an ability to give their talent some work outside of the WWF. I think it was very much it was a favor to Lawler as well. And I think a lot of this was likely just spurred on by Vince McMahon, who when he first got into wrestling, he very much wanted to be a performer. And his dad wouldn't let him be a performer. He was like, you are not going to be a wrestler. You're not going to be a performer per se. You'll be the announcer. And I think Vince McMahon deep down always wanted to play this out and had this idea in mind. And it was a way somewhat like a comedian that just wants to try out new material, just going to a comedy club and seeing how it works. I think that's what he looked at Memphis as. It's a smaller promotion. It's not on a national scale. And he could essentially do this anonymously unless you were following the newsletters at the time or tape trading, which was a small percentage.
Or a comedian who's a big success in the comedy world wanting to branch out into maybe more serious acting.
Sure. Adam Sandler.
Maybe. Yeah, Jim Carrey.
Yes. So that's where Vince McMahon found himself in 1993.
But it seemed unique that with the USWA, where the WWE would be sending so much of their own talent to headline their very minor shows. I mean, you had the Macho Man and Bret Hart come in for select dates here.
Yeah, this was a perfect example of, from so many people that work with the WWF, that they can be impossible to deal with, but then when you are working with them, I mean, they went all out here. I mean, taping stuff using their production methods and sending top talent down.
Yeah. And certainly, like, you look at other relationships that the WWF has had with other companies, like, let's say an ECW. You would never see the level of talent that they brought down to Memphis for things like this. Vince himself would never make an appearance in an ECW.
And I think they also looked at it, that USWA could become a – almost in its infancy, this developmental promotion for them. They could be a feeder to the WWF. If there was talent there, they would have the direct pipeline through Lawler to bring them to the WWF. And you saw a lot of talent here, like a Jeff Jarrett, who would shortly thereafter come to the WWF as well.
And before we even go on, we should tell people that for those of you who are unaware, if you wanted to watch these videos, these 30 short videos, before you listen to the rest of the review, just search Mick Memphis on YouTube. And again, the uploader's name is Pop Culture Stew, not Pro Wrestling Stew.
Oh, okay. Let's get that
Pop
correct.
Pop Culture Stew. So thank you to him for dividing these into very small chapters, complete with chapter titles.
Oh, and he had great detailed descriptions as well attached, putting into context when they aired on the Saturday morning television. And you can probably get through these all within 90 minutes, I'd say, tops.
Yeah, and the great thing about YouTube is you can watch in twice the speed as well.
Did you watch it in twice the speed?
The latter video.
How does Corey Macklin sound at double the speed?
He actually wasn't that big of a part of the latter videos, more so like the earlier ones. But, you know, when it came time for Vince's promos, though, I watched those in normal speed because his pacing is such a big part of this style of promo of Vince that I just wanted to enjoy every second of it. In fact, maybe I'll watch it again half the speed.
Death, taxes, and the Macho Man.
Mm-hmm. Chapter one.
Yes.
This is like reviewing a book.
Yeah, I didn't break these all up into chapter by chapter. I more so went by week here because there were multiple videos per week. And, you know, I always enjoy promotions that are built around lots of great talkers. And that to me was one of the biggest things here. Not to say this was maybe Jim Crockett promotions in 1986, but the amount of guys who could just do great promos
compared to
today, it's glaring when you go back and watch some of this stuff, even on the network or in this case, the Memphis stuff. And you look at today of how many guys are so harnessed.
We go crazy over somebody cutting some semblance of a realistic promo on a talking smack. But, I mean, you go back to this time, unscripted promos were all there was.
There is such a great opening. I mean, for someone that could come in and just be just an above-average promo, how it could just blow away so much of what you see today. But it's not so much the people as it is the structure. That's the biggest difference you see. This very much loose. This is, I mean, Memphis, it's just very rough around the edges, which is part of its charm. And letting guys go out there and it's, hey, you got to fill 5 minutes. And they had to go out there. And it was always as well way. I mean, their business lived and died on that Monday night show. Mm-hmm. And you have a Saturday morning 90-minute infomercial to sell people. And if that show is down, you learn very quickly what works and what doesn't work, and you retool it each week.
So to clarify, the USWA business model was Saturday TV, Monday was their live show at the Mid-South Coliseum.
Yeah, and then they'd tour as, like, around their loop as well, doing that each week. But the big show was Monday night at the Mid-South Coliseum.
Weekly.
Every Monday night at the Mid-South Coliseum. And there was a period where they were selling that thing out every single week. 11,000 people in the same city.
That's amazing.
So that's something that in the current landscape, and we'll keep it to WWE, is that you don't have that pressure every week. Like, you make a lot out of the television rating and stuff. The WWE having – there isn't that pressure each week to make sure that you draw a strong house and that you live and die by what – 1 week does.
Yeah, or maybe it's an issue of them having too many things to promote. Not only do they have to get you to watch Raw the next week, they'll have a pay-per-view that they'll have to make you watch, or SmackDown, or some special on the network. There's too much that they're trying to cram in, whereas this felt like a much simpler model.
Yeah, they had the big match to promote Monday night. They had attached taglines to it.
And one match, really.
Fire on the Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And those green screen images, Way.
That's something I'll say about this, watching these videos. It's that this did not feel like 1993. It felt like 1973, the way they produce this TV. I mean, I've seen a lot of that old Memphis stuff. And the graphics, the TV, the production, it looked exactly the same as that.
And this was – I mean, Memphis was ahead of the curve in the way that it was WMC paying them for this show. Which, for a lot of these smaller territories, they were paying for the television time, and Memphis was such a staple, it was the other way around, where they were getting money from the station to put on the show.
Right.
So,
but everything about this, I'm watching, and I'm also thinking at the same time, oh, this is, you know, I'm reminded of what was happening concurrently in the WWF in 1993. And then I look at the way this show looked, and I can't wrap my head around the fact that both of this occurred at the same time. Like, I'm watching this USWA stuff and the grainy footage. Granted, it's like dubbed off of VHS and whatnot, but just even the way the graphics look and the font. Ugh. Like, there's no way to me to in my head to wrap around the idea that Nirvana was around at the same time as this show.
Yeah. I mean, 1993. It feels like in wrestling, 1993 feels so long ago. But in the real world, it doesn't feel like the same amount of time, even though we are talking 23 years.
Sure. Yeah.
I guess this was going down, the Jays were getting set for their second World Series victory.
That's a long time ago to me, though.
I guess so.
I think it all depends on how much you know about maybe a certain area of knowledge. Like for you can fill in all those gaps between 1993 and 2016 of things that happen.
Whereas, but is it a blank for you?
I'm saying for baseball.
Oh, for baseball.
Like, you know, those gaps are probably a lot less.
Sure. Well, let's start off. And this is the August 21st, 1993 show. And the announcers that you'll be most familiar with on this, I mean, Corey Macklin was essentially the second guy to Dave Brown, who was the main forefront of this broadcast. Very, very popular weatherman in Memphis, and him and Lance Russell, when Memphis moved to WMC, I mean, they had been with the prior network, and they were just like doing the wrestling as like a side thing on the weekends, and they were so popular, they came with the package to go to WMC. And I mean, Dave Brown, his importance was significant with Memphis. I mean, these were the town kind of heroes a lot, these wrestlers, and this was your friendly uncle or grandfather that hosted the wrestling show.
And I suppose they provided a level of credibility.
Tons.
You know, for your local audience especially. It's a little, again, very – I can't help but watch this show comparing it to what I currently see in the WWE. And to see this Dave Brown, this meteorologist – present professional wrestling as if it was the week's weather forecast was really different and, in my opinion, very refreshing to see. I think it really worked here. There's nothing too flashy about him, but he's not completely dry either. He's got that weatherman's, you know, it's got to be really sunny, like kind of like a bit of personality, but like a little bit corny, but not overbearing to the point where he takes away too much attention from the performers. Which I thought worked for all this.
Yes. Corey Macklin, I mean, whatever sizzle Dave Brown maybe didn't provide, Corey Macklin, just the complete opposite. I mean, and this wasn't prime Corey Macklin. This wasn't Corey Macklin dressed up in army fatigues to go to war and falling out of a truck This was, I mean, Corey Macklin, as Memphis would progress later into the 90s, and they kept doing the studio show in the 2000s, which aired on Fight Network. And, I mean, Corey Macklin was just something else.
Yeah.
Who you know, sadly passed away a few years ago in a car wreck. But Corey Macklin, I mean, you either love Corey Macklin or you can't stand Corey Macklin. But Dave Brown is plugging the stretcher match that is coming up between Jerry Lawler and referee Paul Neighbors, who would be a big part of this entire angle. And they showed footage from a tag match involving Lawler and Jeff Jarrett against Bret and Owen Hart, with Neighbors getting into the face of Lawler, pulling his hair, and not allowing him to help Jarrett as the Harts would double-team him. And so that was our controversy coming out with heel referee-turned-manager Paul Neighbors.
So just going back into a bit more background about why we chose it, Chris, the fact-checker from the board, from the unofficial John Pollock fact-checking thread, has been bugging us to do this review forever. He requested it for the anniversary show. We turned it down. A bunch of people were upset.
What jerks.
That we didn't. But simply, like, this really was not the type of review for
we couldn't have done a live commentary for this.
But nonetheless, you know, this seemed interesting. Okay, so we'll review it the next week. And I personally never really understood it. Yeah, I know it's Vince McMahon doing some heel work in a small promotion, but so what? But then, like, I started watching these videos, and I started to get it. And it became way more interesting to me than I could have anticipated, because I grew up watching this era of WWE TV in the early 90s. And so to see Bret and Owen here, who at the same time on WWE TV were total baby faces, this was – what month was this? Do you know?
This was August of 93. So this was after Bret had lost the title to Yokozuna earlier that year at WrestleMania, won the King of the Ring, and was feuding with Lawler on television from the King of the Ring attack.
And I'm watching this as a kid. I remember exactly at 9 years old, you know, Bret was the hero. Here's Jerry Lawler, that asshole, attacking Bret after the, you know, he had won. He had beat Bam Bam Bigelow for the crown. And Bret's the ultimate babyface, along with his little brother Owen. But then I see him in this Memphis show facing the same people, but Bret is cheating. Bret is cheating to get the victory, along with his brother Owen.
This was legitimately Bizarro World.
Yeah.
It was guys playing the opposite roles that the national audience sees every week.
And this went for everything else. So for me, it was like watching the reverse of what I had seen as a child. And it was like seeing Nelson.
And Milhouse.
And Milhouse. With Milhouse being the bully.
And that's why Jerry Lawler shines in this, because he justifies all of his heel antics on WWF television.
Oh, my God.
Because to the Memphis fans, here is one of their own against those asshole New Yorkers who are rude and look down upon us. And Vince McMahon is this evil corporate owner, and Jerry Lawler is our hometown guy.
And this Memphis crowd in the WMC studio, whatever,
they would take a bullet for Jerry Lawler.
Yeah. Jerry Lawler could do no wrong. Jerry Lawler could have, you know, slapped old ladies around, or, I don't know, done something really, really awful. And
which is a testament, because he was a great heel in Memphis as well.
And this crowd would have just, you know, said, go, Jerry, go do it. Do it to those Yanks. So that was an aspect of this show that I really didn't anticipate and that I found really interesting.
So from there, Brown interviews Lawler about the stretcher match with our first of many green screens. They love this green screen. This is where that production money went to.
Low budget production.
And he promises Way, that Paul Neighbors is going to leave in an ambulance next Monday night at the Mid-South Coliseum. And if he does not send him away in an ambulance, he is going to refund all of the fans' money. A tried and true gimmick, especially in this territory.
Why don't they do that anymore? Why can't Dolph Ziggler offer to give everybody their money back if he doesn't beat The Miz for the IC title at No Mercy?
You know what's weird is that this gimmick would be used quite a lot. If so-and-so can't achieve this, they will refund all the fans' money. It's such a odd babyface promise, because as the fan, are you rooting for Jerry Lawler to make good on his promise, or are you rooting for the heel to make you money? Wouldn't you be backing Paul Neighbors here and you get your $10 back?
Well, it depends how much you like the babyface versus how much you value money, I suppose.
Well, it was also the way to do, like, you were promised that you were going to get this clean finish.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Which I actually quite like. What if Connor were to promise that? You think he could get away with that?
Yeah, the commission wouldn't allow it.
Yeah.
Non-commissioned state here in Tennessee.
No, he would pay out of pocket. Why would the commission have anything to do with it?
No.
If I don't beat Eddie Alvarez at UFC 205, I will pay everybody their ticket.
That seems like that would be quite the stressful administration process to go one by one throughout Madison Square Garden and find out who paid what. I mean, do you cover the service fees, paid the Ticketmaster?
No, not the service charge. Ticketmaster keeps that.
Thank God that Memphis wasn't doing any $12 million gates, which 205 could do. So he's made this promise, and he talks about how the people in the WWF think that here in Memphis they're all hillbillies and yokels, including the big cheese Vince McMahon. And Corey Macklin made a brief appearance here, and then we got Paul Neighbors joining Dave Brown. And as they shoot this, Neighbors is cutting his promo while he's off camera. You could see like the edge of his face before he walked into the shot.
See, I didn't know who Paul Neighbors was. Mm-hmm. I didn't even hear them mention that he was this referee, so I was expecting like some big burly wrestler. The guy shows up, and he looks like some dude who works behind a deli counter at the grocery store.
Well, Paul Neighbors informs Corey Macklin and Dave Brown that Vince McMahon will be in his corner next Monday night, and he promises he is going to win without any money-back guarantee, and enters the screen to make this point.
See how, because like at least if you're watching the WWF, Vince was never ID'd as anything but the commentator or the host.
No.
So on Memphis here, you have Jerry Lawler basically talking about Vince, referring to him as the owner, referring to him as the president. So how smart were the Memphis fans?
Well, as well, what predated Lawler going to the WWF, and which was so interesting at the time, was that Lawler went super hard on the WWF on Memphis television prior to him going to the WWF, throwing out like big stuff like steroid accusations and running them down. So I feel it was kind of established. I mean, that, you know, it was Vince McMahon's promotion, but you're right. A lot of, you know, fans like you and I at this time, how old were we? 8, 9?
Yeah.
I mean, probably didn't really connect the dots of what Vince McMahon's overall role of the WWF was at that time. But I think your older audience probably understood Vince McMahon and his role, and they made it much clearer here in Memphis that it was Vince McMahon's company. So then we saw a taped segment of the King's Court, which was taped August 18th in Lowell, Massachusetts, which for effect to the northern crowd, they just labeled as Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Not solely Lowell.
This was an edition of the King's Court, which was Jerry Lawler's Piper's Pit segment that used to air in the WWE. This
yes.
was shot at a WWE event in front of a WWE crowd.
For Memphis. This didn't air anywhere but Memphis, obviously.
Yet this featured a Jerry Lawler in full heel mode, which was such a contrast compared to how Jerry Lawler's been speaking in all these other clips.
Yes. And he brings out Vince McMahon. And Lawler is insulting all of these fans up north, and he goes through all of his accolades that he went through to become the King of Wrestling and ties it into Bret Hart winning this King of the Ring tournament and their pending SummerSlam match. And Vince brings up how he lost to Bret in Memphis, and it was, Lawler says, because of a crooked referee, and then plugs the match against Paul Neighbors. Poor Paul Neighbors, never identified by name here on the King's Court. And it's essentially a segment building up to this Monday night match with Neighbors and the stipulation about the fans getting their money back. If he fails to put Neighbors away in an ambulance, Vince is going to be there. He says he will purchase a ticket and he's going to get his money back, and says that the next day in the Memphis Commercial Appeal, the headline will read, "The King is bankrupt and he's going to be exposed as a Burger King." And Lawler comes back saying, "This Burger King will give you a Whopper." And Vince,
how is he going to top that?
If that's the case, I can assure you it won't be a happy meal. from the man that brought you Sasha Wanks, Vince McMahon.
Maybe he would have made Sasha Wanks work, but...
I love it. McDonald's Burger King at the forefront of this feud.
Listen, for 93, for Memphis, I thought it was the perfect tone. You know what I mean?
How do you think the audience in Lowell that night read Vince McMahon?
I have no idea.
There must have been so many confused people in the crowd. And also promoting this match, they had no way of seeing.
Yeah. Which, again, really surprises me at how much Vince actually gave. He gave up kind of his own production time to dedicate to this, what is ultimately a pretty small market in Memphis. So it was especially interesting to see Lawler basically here cut the same promo we saw him cut in the previous segment, but in a heel voice with the roles reversed. He's talking a lot more kind of with that snickering, smarmy tone as opposed to his baby-based voice, which was just a lot more genuine, talking normally like you see him in interviews.
Yeah, and it was interesting as well going back. And I went through some of the old observers just covering this at the time. And for a lot – for the 60-minute syndicated shows of Memphis where they sent it to the other markets in the area, almost all the Vince stuff is edited off, the syndicated version. There is really? Some of it on there,
right.
But a lot of it was edited off. And I don't know if that was simply Vince wanted this all concentrated in – the Memphis market.
Which would make sense.
But also doing this segment at a WWF taping, granted it wasn't for WWF television.
Thing is, though, you did have Lawler talking like a heel, though, here. And you had Vince, you know, if you...
You're right. He was preserving his WWF role, even though this was not going to see any WWF eyes on television.
And you had Vince, who you could, I think, only accept as a heel if you had seen... his previous stuff.
Yeah, he was the babyface to this audience.
Yeah.
Certainly.
It's really interesting. And it's, I guess it's a lot like that Sean Brett U.S. America, U.S. Canada angle that was to follow.
Yeah, yeah. There were a lot of parallels to that. They go back to Macklin and Brown informing the fans in Memphis are all behind Lawler. And we get another interview from Lawler, but this time he's coming out and he's got some other stuff to plug.
Also wanted to mention real quickly, since you're going over what's going to be taking place out of town, this afternoon, the King and my army are going to be up playing some softball in Brighton, Tennessee, this afternoon at 1 o'clock at the Brighton Ball Field. Everybody around Munford, Millington, Covington, everybody come on down. Brighton, Tennessee, this afternoon at 1. And also tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock, I think we have come on over here real quick, Arthur. Here's Arthur Avant. He's from Senatobia at the Bedour Center down there, and we're going to be down there tomorrow at 1 o'clock, right? And... where's it at? Doubleheader against who we're playing down there?
DMC, Bedour Crusaders.
All right, can't wait. That's going to be tomorrow. I want to invite everybody down to the Bedour Memorial Center down there, right? 1 o'clock, okay? Thanks a lot.
He's got a softball game later today at 1 o'clock in Brighton. And then he brings in this other dude to mention tomorrow they've got a doubleheader.
Are you surprised they didn't do this as part of that Lowell WWF taping?
Just a sec, Vince. Let's talk about the starting lineup. This was just something
else. I'm glad Pop Culture Stew included this.
For all the shit that Sid Vicious gets about his love of softball, I mean, Jerry Lawler actually tailored his WWF schedule around softball. Like, there were days he would not work, like go on the road, because of softball and touch football.
You guys got to have a life outside of wrestling.
But he brings that life into wrestling. I mean, God. Yeah, he's using his television to plug his softball games.
Probably gets a free membership.
That said, if I was in Memphis, I would probably go check out a Jerry Lawler softball game.
Sure. I'd love to see. Like, didn't they do, like, base WWF softball games? Like, for WrestleMania?
They did those celebrity games, yeah.
I'd love to see that.
Would you want to watch?
Raw versus SmackDown. That should be a pay-per-view, okay? A network special. The WWF softball game. Forget, just take out the wrestling. I just want to see these guys play softball.
Every month they should.
Actually, there's an issue of the X-Men that's a very popular X-Men issue called.
They play softball?
Called the baseball issue. Or the softball issue, yeah, where they essentially take a break from fighting and the whole issue is them using their powers to play a softball game.
It's like the Divas at SummerSlam, the dodgeball game.
What?
Remember in Toronto at the SummerSlam when they were here?
No, I don't.
They had the Divas and they played a dodgeball game on pay-per-view.
Whatever. But the point is...
Uniforms and everything.
The point is, I think a break from the usual can be a good thing. It's a little unconventional today, I know, but that's...
Okay, so you want to see a Raw SmackDown softball game.
I would love to see that. I'm not even joking.
That's your Survivor Series main event. Then, so the August 23rd Memphis Mid-South Coliseum show ended up doing pretty good by Memphis standards at the time. Over 3,500 people were there and a gate of $23,826. This would actually be the best drawing of these Mid-South Coliseum shows involving the WWF talent over the next month. Paul Neighbors and Jerry Lawler with Vince McMahon's appearance was actually kind of the high point, at least live gate-wise.
What were those numbers again?
3,567 in attendance and a gate of 23,826.
It was 3,567.
It was the largest gate in the USWA since 1988.
Isn't that like $7 a ticket?
Yeah, well, I'm not saying these were expensive tickets, Way.
Okay.
But
oh, there you go.
These fans wanted their $7 back.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been much for Lawler to pay back.
But yeah, their largest gate in 5 years was this Paul Neighbors stretcher match.
Cool.
So don't ever downgrade Paul Neighbors and his drawing ability here. And this also, this same show, Way, had a non-title match between Yokozuna and Lex Luger a week before the Lex Express culmination at SummerSlam.
Wow.
So maybe some credit goes to the SummerSlam main event also being on the undercard.
Vince must have been getting a chunk of that $7 ticket.
Yeah, I'm sure they comped him.
Yeah.
Despite his words at the tapings. Okay, so we go to August 28th. So this is coming out of the stretcher match. And they're promoting a special Sunday night card at the Mid-South Coliseum because this was when SummerSlam aired Monday night on pay-per-view in 1993. So they were not going to go in direct competition. So the Memphis fans can purchase the hated WWF pay-per-view. Mm. And
I guess Lawler wasn't really working the – was he working the pay-per-view?
He was scheduled for the Brett match, which ended up being Brett and Doink with Lawler coming out on crutches at the pay-per-view. Okay. So this Sunday night show was headlined by a cage match between Bret Hart and Jerry Lawler the night before their SummerSlam match. And we got highlights of the tag with Lawler and Jarrett against the Harts from the last time, ending when Bret pinned Lawler. And as well, getting a foreign object from Burt Prentice. And Bret just cutting a heel promo, calling Lawler a phony, and that Owen is the Prince of Darkness. And I know you really enjoyed Bret's heel work here in Memphis.
It was, again, amazing to me. To me, Bret in 93, 94 is like he's my Hulk Hogan of that time. And to see that era of Bret Hart in the same feud against Jerry Lawler talking as a heel and talking like these weren't like subtle heels. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, you know, the type of guy you'd see maybe on Raw today where you can kind of accept Roman Reigns as a heel or a babyface. This was straight up Bret, nasty heel. You know what I mean? Cheating to win, talking shit about Memphis. This was like, you know, 97 Bret.
This was also 93. The go-to of every WWF heel here was these hillbillies.
Yeah.
He said, so much for the king, so much for Memphis, and so much for Disgraceland.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a knock at a local Toronto restaurant.
A bar, yeah.
They showed highlights of Lawler and Paul Neighbors with Vince McMahon showing up at ringside with Pat Patterson.
Yeah.
And this crowd hated these two.
He introduced Pat Patterson as the muscle.
Yeah.
And, yeah, okay, I could buy it. But, I mean, the guy also
of all these guys at his disposal.
Like, Giant Gonzalez, Yokozuna, you know, of all people to bring as muscle.
Pat Patterson. He cut a heel promo, says he doesn't like Lawler or his fans. There was a spot where Lawler's chasing Neighbors on the floor, and Vince McMahon just sticks his foot out and trips Lawler.
Oh, he was so good. Because, like, for people who haven't seen it, like, this Vince McMahon is not the Mr. McMahon character in full.
The contrast is what made it so great, knowing Vince at the time.
It's Vince McMahon kind of playing super sarcastic. I'm not a bad guy. I'm not. I'm a good guy. I'm just here to watch
the best heels
match.
Are the ones that justify their actions.
Yeah, and so, like, Vince is, like, sneaking in all these heelish things, but pretending he didn't do anything. So Lawler's running around the ring, Vince trips him, and then just looks away like he didn't do anything wrong, which I thought he played so well.
It led to Lawler getting into the face of the muscle, Pat Patterson, throwing him into the post, and then Pat grabbed Lawler and Vince struck him. And then Lawler eventually made his comeback on Neighbors, hit him with 5 pile drivers, and put him in the ambulance. And then, just for good measure, after adjusting his neck with the pile drivers, he threw a fireball into Paul Neighbors' face and left in the stretcher, and the fans did not get their money back.
I thought the fireball was a little bit unnecessary.
It's kind of his thing.
Like, I know, but the guy
we would later get a montage of the best of the Lawler fireballs.
But I'm just saying, like, this guy is not even a pro wrestler. He's a middle-aged referee, and you just did 5 pile drivers to him. He's strapped onto a stretcher. He's unconscious, and you throw a fireball in the guy's face.
He didn't urinate on him.
What?
Could have been worse. I'm just saying.
I guess it
this was
been. Sure.
Pick your humiliation.
So where did they actually air these? Did they ever air these matches in full? Because they would tape them all, of course, for highlights.
Well, no, like they'd show highlights, but that was, I mean, their business was, it was the live event. It was pushing people to the live event. You had to pay to see the big match.
Did they put out tapes or anything at this time?
I mean, it was all taped, as you can see here.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of work to get these things commentated and, you know, a shot.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I'm sure, actually, there were ways. I really don't know the answer off the top of my head, but they were shot and they did have commentary. Mm. And, yeah, I don't know how much of the matches they would show on the Saturday morning television, because I didn't...
Probably just all this. Probably just the highlights.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't want to establish that with your fan base that you could skip the show and just watch it on TV afterwards. You wanted people to come and pay for the match. It was essentially the same as a pay-per-view. Yep. Was instead you got one every Monday night. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, Vince McMahon is reflecting on the match with this sit-down promo.
These sit-down promos,
fantastic.
This is what Bray Wyatt should be, man.
Ugh.
Like, and the way Vince sits down too, it's like a lit green curtain in the background, and Vince is just
the powder blue suit.
It's just Vince McMahon sitting down, angled. Like, he's not sitting directly in front of the camera. He's angled to the kind of like 45 degrees and looking at the camera, talking very calmly, and just talking like an asshole.
And in 93, dude was jacked as shit.
Oh yeah.
He is disgusted. How could you be so rude? And he denies tripping Jerry Lawler and says that Lawler got in his face and his breath. It was as bad as the Mid-South Coliseum and all those people. His ability to convey disgust was incredible.
Yeah.
And he promotes the cage match for the next night involving Lawler and Brett. And
his top heel, Brett the Hitman Hart.
Yes, and mentions he won't even say Paul Neighbors by name. He just refers to him as this poor pot-bellied referee and challenges Lawler, why don't you make the same money-back guarantee when you face Bret Hart and not some lowly referee? Because if you do, you're going to receive a big surprise. And all of Vince's promos was just his own plausible deniability that the audience saw through. Like, yeah, he would defend everything. I never tripped him. When I said a big surprise was showing up, I didn't know that Giant Gonzalez would be there. He was outstanding. And this was a guy that probably had cut these promos in his head for years and years.
Well, he's the guy coaching all the heels that you see, all the great heels that we've ever seen, right? So this is all within his head, has always been. But we've just never seen him do it in front of a camera. And he was really fantastic.
So Lawler gets his response. The rule of thumb on all of these shows was Lawler always gets a rebuttal, sometimes multiples in a show. Mm-hmm. And he's with Dave Brown, and he's also wearing a King of the Ring t-shirt, which he calls this silly little tournament. And he warned the WWF about this tournament ahead of time for being ridiculous without him in it. And he mocks New York, calling it the rotten apple. And he's asked all the time why about his actions in the WWF. And he says, well, now you people can see what kind of guy Vince McMahon is like. So why do you think I act that way when you watch WWF television? Vince McMahon is a 14-carat jerk. And he invites Vince McMahon back. He knew he could beat Paul Nabors, and he also knows he can beat Bret Hart. And he doubles down and says, if I don't beat Bret tomorrow night, I will refund all of the fans' money yet again. And he walks off, and this show away would do a $13,000 gate. So why don't you divide that one?
What's the attendance?
Oh, yeah, I don't have the attendance here. But anyway, down $9,000 from the Paul Nabors match. So this was less of a risk by Jerry Lawler than the Paul Nabors guarantee.
But again, such an interesting exercise to have somebody like a Jerry Lawler play a major heel at the time on WWF TV, then have to go back to his home territory of Memphis and have to justify all of his actions. Like, I guess he's like the convict who does something, some terrible crime, going back to his fragile old mother and trying to explain, Mom, I had to do this.
They could have done this whole story with Big Boss Man and Nails, from Nails' point of view.
Sure.
Being unjustly convicted by this evil cop.
Saying, you know, Mom, I had to steal this car, because if I didn't, then, I wouldn't have been able to feed this starving child in Africa. You know, some bullshit like that. But this
Grand Theft Auto excuse number one.
But this Memphis crowd was just buying into anything Jerry Lawler had to say. And it was a lot of fun to see the two sides.
And it was just – I mean, Memphis just had these great fans that it's like they truly were invested in this. Yeah. And these characters.
Well, and especially the fact that like Lawler hit that Memphis versus New York thing so hard. And I think – which is, again, why this is so surprising to me that this was from 1993, because I felt like any remnants of kind of that whole territory system had largely kind of been wiped out by then. But this felt like such an old school way of doing professional wrestling, where – Lawler was constantly amplifying and emphasizing his relatability to the Memphis audience against these invaders from New York.
Yeah, and that was kind of the ability of Memphis to go as long as they did after the other territories had fallen apart. They had a broadcaster that paid them, and they paid really cheap. I mean, this was a territory where talent did not make a whole lot of money, and they kept costs really down. They showed highlights of the Lawler-Brett cage match, with Owen showing up and trying to climb, and Jeff Jarrett getting involved to assist Lawler, and then we got the appearance of Giant Gonzalez, who enters the cage to assist Brett. What a meeting of the minds.
Yeah, this is crazy to me.
And Brett just full-on spits on Jerry Lawler, like just drops a loogie right on him.
And again, like that's what I mean in that, like, it's not Brett playing subtle heel, like not even a babyface who just kind
of
mistakenly
he's a piece of shit.
Does some heel things. This is Brett playing full on heel, spitting on Jerry Lawler. You know what I mean? Nothing like something that the babyface Bret Hart that I grew up with would never do.
You should do some research this weekend if you happen to run into Bret Hart. Ask him about his Memphis run.
Oh, at the Comic Con. Yeah.
So Lawler ducked a clothesline and Gonzalez accidentally nailed Brett, and it allowed Lawler to pin Brett. And then they double-teamed Lawler, Brett applied the sharpshooter, and then Owen was in the ring with Jarrett and delivered a pile driver to his future tag team partner. Mm-hmm. And thus, Jerry Lawler, 2-0 when the gate is on the line. And we get reaction. Corey Macklin is with Giant Gonzalez and Burt Prentice. The best combination throughout these 30 chapters. And Prentice cuts a promo on Lawler. Gonzalez is going to run him out of Memphis, which was the exact opposite, because Giant Gonzalez was supposed to stick around here for a while, and he left after like 2 weeks. This was essentially his exit from wrestling as well. He didn't even come back to the WWF. And we got a Giant Gonzalez Sam Norris match. And throughout these segments, I mean, the wrestling is so small. It's highlight form or it's squash matches. Even in as short a match as this was, my God, was Giant Gonzalez awful.
Yeah. And
his offense is just,
dude,
awful,
but
awful.
But the jobber didn't help. Like, this guy, Sam Norris?
Sam Norris.
I didn't even know if this guy was a real wrestler. He just might as well have been a body there. You know,
he was no Freezer Thompson.
No, he wasn't. This guy, like, he got like he just seemed awkward in the ring, got terrible height on that choke slam. Not a great jobber.
It was Gonzalez killing him. Paul Neighbors is in a neck brace from the five pile drivers and has been fired as a referee because of his actions. And Burt Prentice is trying to bilk him for $10,000 in order to have an interest in his wrestlers. And he's just trying to get this 10 grand out of Paul Neighbors. And Burt Prentice will allow him to manage his talent, including the Dog Catchers, our USWA tag champions, for their match against T.D. Steel and Tim Sadler. What'd you think about the Dog Catchers, Way? Who are dressed up as masked dog catchers in uniforms.
Because of the Moon Dogs? Is that why they're the Dog Catchers?
Yeah, I guess that was...
Yeah. They just kind of felt like your local, again, like straight out of the 70s, I'll say, tag team.
Yeah, and they were constantly changing. It was like all these guys that played the Dog Catchers. They just hit a double flapjack to Sadler for the win. And they were feuding with the Moondogs, as we mentioned at the time. We go to September the 4th, and Corey Macklin interviews Jerry Lawler to promote his match with Giant Gonzalez for Monday night at the Mid-South Coliseum. And this is the first time we see Lawler with the Unified Heavyweight Championship. And he was on his 15th of 28 title reigns with the USWA title, which was the Unified title, as they were calling it. It got very confusing here because they also had a Southern title that they were now calling the USWA title. And then this Unified title had previously been called the USWA title.
Okay.
So it's very confusing.
28
title reigns for Jerry Lawler. So this was magical number 15. So
yeah,
eat your heart out, John Cena, at No Mercy. Another Vince McMahon promo taped. He denies any involvement in that cage match where Giant Gonzalez showed up. He said that Lawler was in for a big surprise, but I had no idea how big. And says people are seeing Jerry Lawler for what he is and how people outside of Memphis view Lawler. And he quotes Jim Neighbors. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
No relation to Paul.
No relation or spelling to Paul Neighbors. And says that now Jerry Lawler has an 8-foot problem.
Yeah. Vince didn't make many live appearances in Memphis during this run.
I think he made two.
Yeah, but he would just send tapes in. He must have taped all these at the same time. Maybe. I don't know.
Him coming out on the Saturday morning television with that crowd. Can you imagine the
heat?
He's not
making that flight. But the guy just sending tapes in, I thought, was very effective. And again, you know, going back to what somebody like a Bray Wyatt should be, just appearing on a screen, cutting a promo, delivering a threat, and then actually delivering, I feel like Vince does way better than somebody like a Bray Wyatt is trying to do right now. Like, Vince really felt like a god type of character from New York, only sending messages every single week and then sending challenges for the babyface to overcome. And that's it.
And then we got a rah-rah speech from Jerry Lawler about how he hates Vince. He hates New York, but he loves Memphis. And he's adding all the WWF names to the list of butts he's kicked. September 11th, Lawler comes out to his theme, which was kind of this takeoff of the Rocky theme.
Right.
And we show highlights of Tatanka as he is being sent down to Memphis to face Jerry Lawler.
Did you find it interesting that Vince would only send babyfaces down? Like WWF babyfaces down to play heel rather than send heels? I mean, I guess Giant Gonzalez. But
yeah, Giant Gonzalez was the one. It was also, I mean, the company wasn't super rich with heels at this time either. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, they probably, you know, they're not sending Yokozuna down. I didn't think they were going to have their champion involved. Lawler was one of their main heels at this point. I mean, you could have gone...
I guess because maybe the idea was that on TV, Lawler was always supporting the heels,
right,
in WWF. Mm-hmm. And so they had to have Lawler face off against the opposition. But, yeah.
And they showed just this whole video package of Tatanka. This was when he was still in the middle of his on-screen undefeated streak. And this was actually just a few weeks before they taped the Ludwig Borga loss for Superstars. And Tatanka was...
full-on babyface. Again,
yeah.
To me, like one of the top babyfaces of that era of the WWE. But here in Memphis, what an asshole, Tatanka.
We'll get to Tatanka later on. They had a squash match with Jerry Lawler facing Lee Vincent, and he won with the fist drop off the turnbuckle. And then Paul Neighbor sends in his guys, the dog catcher, one of the dog catchers, a guy named Rick York with Cobra written on his trunks, and a giant board that Paul Neighbor has.
This is something they found backstage, I guess.
It's like this panel board.
Plank.
And Lawler stops him and attacks Neighbors and hits him in the head with his injured neck with this board, and then Lawler cuts a promo on Neighbors. But the match they're plugging for the Monday night show is the end of the trail match between Lawler and Tatanka for later this week for the Unified Championship. And they had this picture of this Native American, this sketch of a Native American looking down like they have no life left in them. And I guess this was to represent...
Correction, Indian.
Is Indian the proper term?
No, it's not.
Okay, because Memphis wrestling in 93, political correctness was not on their to-do list.
Tonto. Yes.
Anyway, yes, some explicit racism coming your way, folks, later on in this show. And Vince McMahon did another promo mocking Lawler being the king of the unified title. He says that he is the voice of the WWF, and Lawler is the king of the cheaters. And this is where they mention him throwing a fireball at Giant Gonzalez in their previous Monday night match, and that was the end of Giant Gonzalez. I don't think we saw him again, did we? He was done. And he says, wrestling has been reduced in Memphis to people setting others on fire. He's just disgusted at this practice implored by Jerry Lawler, and says that you will see fire this Monday night from Tatanka. And he mentions the lofty standards of the WWF and how Tatanka is undefeated after thousands of matches in his 2 years with the company. Thousands of matches, Way.
Multiple matches.
This guy's having 3 matches a day minimum. He's been very busy. And says Tatanka will put out Lawler's fire and leave smoke signals that will state that Lawler has been dethroned and scalped.
Tatanka will put the fire out. The smoke signals that Tatanka will leave after the fire is out is the king is no longer the king. The king has been dethroned. The king has been scalped.
Ooh. Ooh.
Okay. So then Dave Brown interviews Jerry Lawler, who's taking on an Indian. What would Jerry Lawler have to say? He says that he doesn't like anyone up there, and he only took the position he did in the WWF because they looked down on everyone else. He's there to right the wrongs of the message that the WWF is sending. He calls the wrestlers jokes. He insults Bret Hart and Randy Savage, and that Vince McMahon has to get around with bodyguards and policemen in order to protect him from Lawler. And that's how they're able to do commentary every week, because he's surrounded by bodyguards.
It's a very great attention to detail. The fact that he has to come out here and justify why he's able to do these commentary voiceovers with Vince McMahon to create the image of Vince being in a room 10 feet away from him with Savage with a bunch of bodyguards.
It's like our setup.
Yeah, we're 10 feet away.
All of my bodyguards are here, which I'm glad they were here on Tuesday when Way was mad at me.
It's such a ridiculous, stupid, and simple lie to protect their Memphis gimmick that I found very hilarious and effective.
This became as well. I mean, I feel very much this was, you know, Bill Watts was famous for this, explaining every detail so that you couldn't be at home asking questions on – he was not going to leave any glaring holes.
Yeah.
He would address – it's like sometimes we'll bring up a criticism and it's considered nitpicking. It was not considered nitpicking to some of these promoters. And Jim Cornette had to do this whole runaround weekly in OVW when he had his talent, like the Bashams, who were feuding on TV and hated one another, are suddenly a tag team on SmackDown.
What would they say? What was the justification for that?
They would throw John Laurinaitis under the bus, and they would explain, like, they would do stuff like this, giving a logical explanation to the home territory of why this television makes no sense if you're watching SmackDown.
Interesting. It's kind of, I guess it's kind of like trying to maintain the illusion of the Tooth Fairy to a child who's like, who saw, you know, mom put this dollar bill underneath the pillow.
Yeah. So Lawler continues his promo here, and he references the photo behind him on the green screen of the tired-looking Indian, and he says, when he was a kid, he would play Cowboys versus Indians, and it's a feud as old as time. And Lawler says, I can never remember the Indians ever beating the Cowboys, except for football season. That's Lawler's laugh, by the way. And tells Tatanka,
like you said, McMahon, he better bring some fire. He better be a fiery Indian. He better drink a little fire water, as a matter of fact, because I got something to put on that Indian that Ajax won't take off. Bring him on, Vince McMahon, because the king is ready for him. You want to call me the king of the cheaters? I have to say, I'll do what it takes to win. And I'll do what it takes to win against Tatanka, because I'm winning for this crowd. There are USWA and all of these great fans right here. Not any of you jerks in the World Wrestling Federation. So bring it on. Because like I said, I got something for Tatanka.
He better drink a little fire water and do whatever it takes to win. And then he ended it with Tatanka's war cry, which I howled at.
Yeah, it's very funny. I thought, for a Memphis babyface promo, this was
let's put offensive language aside for a minute. Lawler was super entertaining.
Oh, he was great. Yeah,
I almost this wish, war cry was just great.
I almost wish he was facing some Chinese stereotypical wrestler.
Oh
the
boy,
great promo we would have had.
Way, I'm sure we could go back into the Memphis archives and find some progressive thoughts about Asian American relations at this time. September the 18th was next, and Tatanka won the match on Monday night and thus was the new unified heavyweight champion. And Vince McMahon is on the screen in his taped area, his Bray Wyatt production suite. And
he's got the blazer on,
buttoned, and he's gloating about Tatanka's win. And he unbuttons the jacket to reveal the championship
around his waist.
Look. He tells them that this title looks much better around my slivet waist. Did you look up? Have you ever heard the term slivet before?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I looked this up, and the first explanation was on Urban Dictionary. And based on that definition, I don't think that's what Vince McMahon was referring to.
What is it? What did you read?
I will let the viewer, listener at home, go type in slivet on Urban Dictionary.
Do you think he means svelte?
Svelte is probably the term he was going for because he was a svelte individual. Okay. And says it looks better around his than Lawler's rotund waist. Fat ass. And Lawler gets one more rematch this Monday night against Tatanka. And then he starts cackling about Custer's last stand. This Monday will be Lawler's last stand.
Man.
Like a 10. A 10 out of 10,
Vince,
dude.
Just kills it in every single one of these appearances. And it genuinely...
Who was the star of this? If you had to rank them, Lawler or Vince, is Vince number one?
Vince, 100%. Lawler was very good.
You needed an awesome baby face for him to be juxtaposed to. But there was no topping Vince's promos this program.
Vince was exceptional. And it felt like all of his promos had no wasted words. They weren't too long. I can't even say the same thing about Randy Savage that we'd see. Like, Vince never rambles. There's a great economy of his words. He always built to a point. Came across very menacing. And it also genuinely looked like he was having a great time doing this.
Oh, I bet you he was having the time of his life cutting these promos. So Brown and Macklin mentioned this past Monday there were three title changes, including Tatanka winning the Unified Championship. They showed highlights. Lawler made a comeback with the straps down. He hit a DDT to Tatanka, and then Paul Nabors distracted referee Frank Morrell, and Tatanka caught Lawler and hit a pile driver, pinning Lawler with his own finishing maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans are livid. Just outraged.
Tatanka, total heel in Memphis.
So Brown and Macklin then interview Tatanka in the Memphis studio, and he's got the title. So they must have had to ship this title around from coast to coast. And Tatanka had a rough go of things. He came out here, and he's insulting the fans and talks about,
"You're so stupid and so ignorant. No wonder you think Jerry King, Jerry the Lawler, is the real king here in Memphis. He's not a real king. You see who the real king is right now, Tatanka. You know, the real kings right here today are the kings of the World Wrestling Federation. Not only myself, Randy Macho Man Savage, Mr. Perfect, Elegante, everyone that came here is a king.
Jerry King, Jerry the Lawler." And he's booed here. He says the real kings are the kings of the WWF. Guys like Randy Savage, Mr. Perfect, Elegante. And he's still undefeated. And Lawler appears as Dave Brown. He took the mic back because the Tonk had stolen the mic away from Dave Brown, who, ooh, as a true pro, had to be pissed about this. That's not something you ever do. Lawler comes out. Tatanka calls him the Burger King. And Lawler admits Tatanka did win, and he won with his own maneuver, no less. And Tatanka refers to the Memphis fans as Elvis-loving hicks. And Lawler brings up that the next WWF pay-per-view is the Survivor Series, and they outline the concept of four-on-four elimination. And he proposes they have their own Survivor Series match here in Memphis, where it would be the champions against, as Lawler will coin it, Lawler's losers, because him and his teammates all lost their titles to Tatanka and his team, which would be Tommy Rich, who had won the Southern title from Jarrett, and the Dog Catchers, who were the tag champions, taking on Lawler, Jeff Jarrett, and the Moondogs. And the way they explained this was that if Lawler could pin Tatanka in this match, he'd win the Unified title. If Jarrett could pin Rich, he'd win the Southern title, and so on and so forth with the tag champions. It sounded very convoluted.
No,
it sounded like you could only win one title, and you could, like, if Jarrett had pinned Tommy Rich, that title would not go to Lawler. That's what it sounded like, having not seen this match in full. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Tatanka agrees to all of this. And if you were going to kind of nitpick this, it's as the Invader, Tatanka's aligning himself with the Memphis regulars. This would have made more sense as a WWF All-Star team, but that probably wasn't an option, that they were going to get four WWF guys for a date.
They were faced with the challenge of having to get the belt off of Tatanka back to Lawler without having Tatanka lose a straight-up match to maintain that streak.
Also remember that at this time, granted, this is one territory, it's one market, but you're giving this WWF talent to draw at the Mid-South Coliseum on these consecutive Mondays when your flagship show is airing nationally with Raw.
Yeah, when did Raw exactly start?
January of 93.
Right.
So this was in the infancy of Raw. Hmm. But even today, I mean, that was a criticism of SmackDown running these Monday night house shows opposite Raw. Is that the smartest thing when you've got your national show? And here the WWF, at the time in 93, they're giving that Memphis market an alternative to just staying home and watching Raw. Anyway, the match is made, and the titles will be on the line, and Tommy Rich shows up and calls. Tommy Rich was great for the brief amount of time he was here. He says, in reference to Tatanka, "This is a real Indian, brother." And Brown then interviews Lawler's team later. They're going to have Richard Lee as the manager in their corner. And he cuts a promo here. It ends with Lawler quoting Beavis and Butthead, of all people. And then we went to break with a montage done to Jam by Michael Jackson.
Ah, yes.
Uh-huh. And
was that Space Jam? Was that a Space Jam thing?
I don't know.
No. But Michael Jordan was in the video.
Michael Jordan was in the Jam video?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Then we got a squash match with Tatanka and Freezer Thompson. There was nothing better on commentary in any of these videos than Corey Macklin yelling, Freezer Thompson! I can't do a good Corey Macklin. And he chops him on the floor, runs him into the post. He's yelling at the fans, chops him to the head, and then hits a Samoan drop for the win. What did you think of Tatanka as a heel? I mean, this guy was not a great promo, but he was hated by this audience.
Yeah, I think he...
He felt like he was in a completely different environment.
I think that was ultimately kind of the end of his peak in the WWE was when he finally turned heel. Maybe I'm just watching compared to today's standard. I think Tatanka is pretty good by today's standard, but I think back then maybe not as much.
I guess it was also like his promos. Look who you're comparing him to on these Memphis shows. Mm-hmm. Like some awesome talkers, and I wouldn't put Tatanka in that category. We got, though, another one with the heel team of Tatanka, Tommy Rich, and the Dog Catchers at the end of this chapter. Tatanka saying he's going to take his team to the WWF. He's going to just scoop all these guys up. And Tommy Rich cut this crazy promo telling all the crazy rednecks to watch on Monday night, and Tatanka refers to them as Hicks again. Hicks being the, the term of choice for many of these outsiders from the mm-hmm. WWF. Which would culminate later in an awesome Photoshop.
Yeah.
September the 25th, they plug the fact that there is no Monday Night Wrestling because of the Mid-South Fair. Nothing to promote. And they're going to have cage matches on today's show. But they plug that they will be back at the Mid-South Coliseum on October the 4th. And guess who's coming in? A video package airs of Randy Savage, a guy with roots in Memphis who was once part of an invasion faction out of his dad's ICW promotion where they came and invaded Memphis and then he joined Memphis. And they showed highlights of many of his big WWF moments appearing on shows like Arsenio Hall, Regis and Kathy Lee, a series of about 10,000 elbow drops from the top, and made this feel like royalty is coming to Memphis in the form of Randy Savage. Mm-hmm. Brown is then told that Vince McMahon's tape promo did not arrive. And the crowd cheers this, that they don't have to hear from Vince McMahon. So Jerry Lawler comes out sporting a Cleveland Browns t-shirt and Zubaz. It was very 1993. And he tells the audience not to blame FedEx for the tape not arriving because FedEx is a Memphis-based company that doesn't make mistakes. Maybe the best Lawler line in all of these promos. Lawler has regained the unified title from that Survivor Series match. So if you're we're trying to keep the chronology of this hot potato title. And he says, you know why Vince McMahon has that stupid little grin on his face? Because he's stupid, that's why. And he calls Tatanka Tonto repeatedly and tells Vince to eat crow because he sent Tonto packing. And he invites Vince to come back so he can get his face set on fire. And Dave Brown says that, well, this was better than a Vince McMahon interview. I don't know about that, but this was a fun Lawler interview.
Yeah, it was a good King promo. It seemed, though, the pattern to me was just constantly flopping the title off of Jerry Lawler onto whoever was coming in. And, like, if you look at the USWA unified title history, it's Jerry Lawler, somebody else, Jerry Lawler, somebody else, Jerry Lawler, somebody else, all the way until his 28th reign.
His 28th reign.
Yeah.
So
who were the other top baby faces, I guess?
Jarrett was next. Brian Christopher, they were in the midst of turning at this point as well. But Lawler was the guy. There was no debate. He was the guy. Lawler returned later in the show for another interview with Dave Brown, praising the best fans in the world, and he plugs other shows they have coming up this week in Brownsville, Tennessee on Thursday, and McDonald's, The Comfort Inn, and The Days Inn are helping to promote that show. And then he mentions that him and Jeff Jarrett recently went to The Grove at Ole Miss for a football game, and they're going to be going to Oxford, Mississippi next month. He says, Tonto is no longer undefeated, which I believe the chronology of this way is that Lawler did pin Tatanka before the tapings where Tatanka got pinned by Ludwig Borga.
But, of course, the WWF never recognized Lawler.
No, they didn't. And Tatanka had actually lost some tag matches, including at tapings prior to the Borga loss. But he was promoted as undefeated on TV up until the Borga loss, mm-hmm. which to me was still one of the more memorable episodes of Superstars. I remember as a kid, I thought that was such a big deal
mm-hmm.
when he finally lost and he was taken out of the Survivor Series main event. And Ludwig Borga, who would have thought? A future Randy Couture opponent in the UFC. So Lawler's promoting all these upcoming shows. And then he says, Tonto is no longer undefeated, unlike his favorite team, the Cleveland Browns, who have started off the NFL season 3-0. And they would go on to finish 7-9.
I guess Memphis didn't have a football team.
No, they did not. They show footage of the Survivor Series match, and it was very much like the WrestleMania 1 finish with Paul Orndorff getting nailed by Bob Orton Jr. In this case, it was Tommy Rich coming off the top, knocking down Tatanka by mistake, and Lawler pinning Tatanka for the big pop. And then Lawler just laughs at them after the clip and tells Vince not to send a boy to do a man's job in reference to Randy Savage, the macho boy. October the 2nd, we skip a week, and no previous Monday night action to recap. They're focusing on the October 4th, Monday night, Fire on the Mountain match. What did you think of this title? What did you think of some of these titles, Wei?
I like them.
They added a little...
You thought it was too much?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I liked having these little subheadings for
a
match.
I really think it helps. I feel like, you know, even like something as simple as AJ Styles versus Dean Ambrose, you come up with a title for that particular match, it helps people remember it.
The boy, or the guy who's going to cry.
Ah, yes.
Doesn't have the same ring as Fire on the Mountain.
Yeah.
So they're promoting Lawler and Savage, which did have history in Memphis. So you were kind of playing off of that. And then we got a Randy Savage promo mentioning his history with Lawler and says that the Mid-South Coliseum will never be the same. Lawler was lucky to get the title back from Tatanka, and that Lawler is not 1/1,000,000th the wrestler that Randy Savage is. And Tatanka is not 1/1,000,000th the wrestler that Savage is, and neither is Lawler. He referred to this once as the UWF title, and then says right after, I don't care about letters.
He realizes he made a mistake.
Yeah, this was one take, Jake.
Yeah.
And he's going to TCB and tap dance on Lawler's head, being all over him like melted butter. And there's no chance in hell of Lawler beating the Macho Man, Randy Savage. And Lawler is not the king. He's a chump. And he guarantees victory and says, I'm your lord and master, Lawler. The next Savage promo we got, he got so much more into it with like this southern drawl that he was really putting on. I like the next promo way better, but you could tell Savage, like he had probably, at this point in 93, he was doing the commentary and very few promos. And when he did promos, I mean, they were those like market, those 30-second market ones. This one, it felt like a lot of these guys, this was like talking smack. They were given, hey, here's 5 minutes to do a promo, which they didn't always have the luxury of getting to do, especially a Savage in 93 when he was doing commentary.
Though I feel like for somebody like Savage, I don't even know how much time he was really given. I feel like they're just telling him, hey, go out and say this. Take as much time as you want.
Yep.
And at times I felt like Savage in this instance probably rambled a little bit too long. Like I got a little bored after
Lawler took note of that too.
Yeah. But as far as a Savage promo, I feel like by this point, I feel like I've seen more Randy Savage impressions than I have Randy Savage promo. So like when I first saw this, I was like, wow, this guy does a great Randy Savage. He's got like the head bob and everything. Of course, it was Randy Savage.
Great eye to detail.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon tape promo was next. He says that people don't believe in the Tooth Fairy or what politicians say, and they don't believe what Lawler has to say. But what people can believe in is that the sun will rise, the earth is round, and they believe in the Macho Man, Randy Savage. And that in life, there are only three guarantees.
Death, taxes, and Randy Savage.
That was the whole promo, and it was great.
It's bravo.
Like how this guy, I mean, you just look at some of the heels that you could have, I mean, Vince McMahon had a larger role as kind of the voice of the WWF.
Mm-hmm.
In a weird way, he was there. I don't want to compare to Lance Russell, but that's the role he served at the time. But my God, to watch this, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Lawler comes out with Dave Brown and says he can take the razors that Vince also mentioned in his promo about different kinds of razors. And
so he brought up this razor company guaranteeing a close shave or your money back or something.
Yeah, he kind of did ramble in this promo. I forgot to note that part. And he says Vince can take those razors and use it to cut off his Randy Savage's hair and beard, but it still won't do the same job as him burning all of his hair off. He's going to light Savage's head on fire and eliminate all of his hair.
This is the fire match, isn't it?
It's Fire on the Mountain.
Fire on the Mountain match. So somebody was going to get lit on fire.
So he then just made fun of Randy Savage rambling on and on forever. And he notes all the WWF guys that he has sent packing. And then we get a video montage of the best of the Jerry Lawler Fireball done to Demolition Man by Manfred Mann's Earth Band.
Wow, there you go.
Locking down the classics.
Yeah.
What a fireball feature this was, Way. Yeah. I've never seen so many fireballs all in one collection.
This is like Street Fighter, Ken versus Ryu. All the fireballs.
We go next to October the 9th, and the Lawler Savage match drew 1,200 people, and the ref got knocked down, poor Frank Morrell, and Lawler threw a fireball at Savage, but Savage made a comeback. This fireball did not prove to be of the full violence that Lawler had promised, because Randy Savage literally walked through fire here,
mm-hmm.
and just came back, hit Lawler with a chain, and he pinned Lawler. And then Jarrett runs in and reveals to Frank Morrell that Savage had a chain, and the referee immediately reverses the decision, and Jarrett attacks Savage, and it ends up with a double team here with Lawler on Savage. So Savage then gets his promo, and he insults Memphis for their injustice. He says Jarrett stuck the chain underneath his arm, and then Tennessee Justice kicked in and called this an international incident. He definitely needs to look up the term international. And there will be a rematch this Monday night, and he's going to win, and then he's going to proclaim himself the King of the Hicks.
But I'm going to proclaim myself King of the Hicks. Yeah! Because I'm better than you are, Lawler, yeah. And the problem is that you know it, yeah. All your little politics down there, all your little stooges, that happened to protect you all these years, it's all come to a head. And now you're going to get found out, yeah. Litigation? You don't like litigation now, do you, boy? I'll tell you what now. Eyes in the back of my head, I need them. I know that. I know that. That's why Vince McMahon, this Monday night, is going to walk down the aisle with me and be in my corner, yeah, at the Mid-South Coliseum. Now, how you like that, boy? Huh? How you like that? Lawler, you're nothing but garbage. You understand that? Tell you, macho style. I'm going to beat you this Monday night at the Mid-South Coliseum, yeah. And around my waist, I'm going to have that unified world championship belt. And I'm going to proclaim myself King of the Hicks. You don't like that now, do you, boy? But that's the way it is, and there's nothing that you can do about it, yeah. And I'm going to slap you, and I'm going to slap each and every one of you in that Mid-South Coliseum going down that aisle, because that's just the way that it is. And I'm going to do it by giving you the Big Apple High Side. The Macho Man is going to be Lawler this Monday night in Memphis for the belt. How do you like that, promoter Eddie Marlin? Dig it.
And he starts doing the Southern drawl. He says Vince McMahon will be in his corner. Lawler, you ain't nothing but garbage. And keeps calling him boy. And how do you like that, promoter Eddie Marlin? That's how he ended it. I did an injustice here recapping this, but this was a great Savage promo.
Savage was great. Savage seemed much more into it this time around and much more kind of aware of the market that he was talking to, probably because he actually was cutting this after doing the match with Lawler versus just doing it from New York.
And he had more meat between we're sending you down to Memphis for this match with Waller. Great. This one, you've done the angle, and you have more for him to sink his teeth into. And I thought that was evident in this promo.
And he played a much more sinister heel in this promo.
So Brown interviews Waller, and he explains that he didn't get him with the fireball properly, and thus Randy Savage no-selling the fireball. Yeah. And he mentions Vince coming to Memphis and being warned about crime in Memphis, unlike in New York, because this was one of Vince's promos at the time where he said, you can sleep with the doors unlocked in New York, but in Memphis, it's a crime haven. And Lawler says, I've been to New York, and Memphis is way better. He says he's got someone to be in his corner as well to combat Vince McMahon. And who is it? Downtown Bruno. Harvey Whippleman is Lawler's muscle, making Pat Patterson look like Lou Ferrigno. And Bruno comes out, and Downtown Bruno had been waiting forever to do this promo.
Was he a Memphis guy?
Yes. Yes. He started out in Memphis and then went to the WWF as well. And he makes fun of Vince's four-piece suit. He says that when he works in the WWF, Vince McMahon speaks to him like he's an idiot, a redneck, and white trash because he's from Mississippi. And then Whippleman says, I used to live in Pittsburgh. It's awful in Pittsburgh. And says the more north you go, the dumber you get, which means Vince McMahon must be the stupidest man on the planet.
What does that mean for us?
I know. I immediately thought us Canadians are not getting the any kind of compliments out of Downtown Bruno's promo here. He says he doesn't care who Vince McMahon is in the WWF. You're coming into our backyard, and there's going to be two hits if you come up to me. Me hitting you and you hitting the ground. And Lawler steps in and says, all right, now don't go rambling like Randy Savage. He wanted Whippleman to wrap this up. And he gets in one last line and says, and Lawler just ends it by calling New York the rotten apple. But I mean, even Downtown Bruno here, this was a fine promo.
I thought it was great. It felt like everybody could talk back then.
There will be two hits, me hitting you and you hitting the ground, which, someone just used that line.
Enzo, maybe.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Enzo. There was a tape Vince promo saying that Savage beat Lawler plain and simple, and Lawler is a cheat and calls it a stunt. What a stunt to pull on one of the greatest wrestlers ever. Shame. Shame on you, Jeff Jarrett. And shame on you, Jerry Lawler.
For putting the chain in Savage's hand.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
And Vince insinuates here that he threatened litigation on Eddie Marlin if he did not book a rematch immediately with Savage. And as a result, the title has been held up. It is no longer Lawler's title. And says that on Monday night, everyone is going to see Randy Savage in living macho vision as he puts on a pair of Savage's glasses to end this. The visuals of Vince were just stunning.
And the way he ended his promos, always with either a visual gag or just some big line. He was able, like, he was a good producer, you could tell.
And this was kind of backwards, because then we go to Dave Brown with Eddie Marlin, who announces that the title has been held up after we just heard Vince say that. Mm-hmm. So it's possible this could have been put out of order. It didn't really matter, but it was just him repeating what Vince had just said in his promo. And Lawler comes out upset by all of this, and Marlin's explaining that it wasn't his call. It was the USWA board. And Lawler notes that this is not right. And the rematch between Lawler and Savage was actually down from the first match. 850 fans and a gate of $5,000. So as you can see, I think it's important to look at these gate numbers that despite this talent coming in, they really did peak with Vince's first appearance, the Paul Neighbors stretcher match, Yoko and Vince you could maybe give some credit to. But it's like this was not a giant business success for Memphis despite the national talent coming in. Hmm. And they kind of just pulled the plug on this afterwards. Savage ends up winning the rematch. He wins the title. And then we go to October the 16th, and the final chapter in this is Eddie Marlin reacting to Randy Savage's title win, how he's been getting faxes faxes all week from Vince McMahon gloating about the WWF being superior to the USWA. Vince McMahon interfered in the match because he was ringside, helping Savage win. And Marlon says that the WWF is not superior. And it was particularly disheartening when the WWF sent this photo. And it was Randy Savage. And they had the King of the Ring logo. But instead of the word ring, it read King of the Hicks. Awesome. I laughed so hard at this photo. And Savage never came back. He never dropped the title. They vacated it. And Lawler actually had to, he was suspended by the WWF shortly after this, because this is when those charges came out about those, where there had been charges laid against Jerry Lawler for having sex with a minor. And it ended with the charges being proven false and just made up. And then Lawler would come back to television the following year at WrestleMania, but he was off TV for this time. He was still appearing on Memphis. But this was essentially the end. This program didn't have the big culmination. It's not like this ended in a Lawler-Vince match, which throughout this, you kind of got the sense that this, that was the ultimate match they were building to.
Although Vince hadn't been wrestling at
all
at this time.
But the tease was there. I think had this been more of a business success, that might have been the next step.
Sure.
It was teased, but this kind of just ended. I mean, they did a few weeks after, they did a Doink came in with Coco Ware and Shawn Michaels, but it was largely, this was it afterwards. It was kind of an abrupt end. Mm. And that was that. That was the Vince McMahon Memphis heel run.
Yep, short. And encapsulated into 30 videos, which you can now find and relive on YouTube. And it was a very enjoyable viewing.
Beyond Vince McMahon, who really stood out for you?
I mean, Jerry Lawler obviously was great. I think Dave Brown was very good in his role. Of the WWE guys, of what little I saw, Brett, just because he was my guy, to see him, you know, in this fashion in 1993 was very interesting to see. I thought Randy Savage kind of came into a more comfortable heel role towards the end. And I'm trying to think who else. Tommy Rich was great.
Yeah, it was kind of brief appearances by a lot. I love that second Randy Savage promo. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just great.
Yeah.
So there you have it. That was our review of the Vince McMahon heel run in Memphis. On a scale of 1 to 10 way, how did this deliver?
Ooh, I'm gonna say 7.5.
Yeah. I'll give this a solid 7. Yeah, I like this a lot. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun to watch.
It was a
watch.
Fun, different type of viewing,
and some great promos throughout this. Though that was to me what carried this.
Vince as a heel gets a 10 though.
He was great.
Yeah.
All right, we are now going to go to your feedback, but we're not going to start the message board. We are going to start with a phone call.
Surprise, surprise, surprise. Hacksaw Jim Powers.
Wow.
What?
Surprise, surprise, surprise. We could not do a tribute, a full review of McMemphis without the one and only Hacksaw Jim Powers joining us to share in his thoughts on this legendary feud involving Jerry Lawler and Vince McMahon.
The fact checker himself, who has been bugging us, annoying us, harassing us, quite frankly, to review this set of videos.
This has been his identity on the message board. I mean, it's tied to this. My first question is why, Mr. Powers, this particular segment of pro wrestling history that left such a mark on you?
Well, it all starts with Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon is one of the most fascinating people ever, let alone in professional wrestling, sports entertainment, entertainment in general. He is such a remarkable guy, and he probably never will, but I really hope he writes a book one day so that we might be able to get to the bottom of why in the world he decided to devote any time to this little, you know, was it playtime? Was it some kind of weird deal he struck with Jerry Lawler? to set up USWA as some kind of a feeder or developmental system for WWF. I want to know why, quite frankly. That's why, is that I don't understand why he chose to do this. In 1993, a steroid trial on the horizon. I don't understand, but I'm so glad that he did it.
You know, as someone that identifies himself as a fact checker, I would think Vince McMahon writing a book would be right up your alley.
Oh, that's right. I would tear that thing apart probably, but would love every minute of it.
What were some of the highlights of this collection that stood out to you?
Well, I love the dichotomy of it. You have Vince McMahon, right out of the gate, you can see just how great a heel he would be later that decade. Juxtaposed with some of the most carny, you know, southern Memphis wrestling tropes imaginable, which makes him a perfect enemy for these people, obviously. And also bringing some legends, really, down to participate. Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Macho Man Randy Savage. I don't understand why, but they all decided to be team players and do this. It's phenomenal.
I thought what also really stood out with a lot of Vince's promos, like, yes, he was smug. He had that great delivery. But just looking at your gifts that you have on your own, on the message board here, this guy was such a great, like, a visual performer as well. You don't even need words. And I think you get across so much of the charm of Vince McMahon as his heel just by the things like the glasses of Savage's that he's wearing or the title belt and how he's just strutting around with this thing. I mean, he was just, this connected so easily and seemed like something that Vince had in his mind for probably years at this point as something he could pull off.
I completely agree. I know Jim Cornette tells it as though Vince decided to go down south and play Dr. Jerry Graham. Some of the articles that Way posted describe, especially particularly the sort of, you know, the life of Vince McMahon as told by Vince McMahon, as David Shoemaker wrote for The Ringer, just compiling a series of interviews over decades together to kind of try to piece together some kind of a biography of this guy. I guess when Vince McMahon was a teenager, he idolized Jerry Graham and hung out with him when Jerry Graham was working for his father. And I don't know if I've ever seen any tape of Jerry Graham, but I've heard that the strut, you know, the mannerisms, the cockiness, the swagger, that all stems from Vince McMahon, the fan, emulating his hero. And you were speaking of this amazing visual performer, you know, doesn't need words. I love, maybe my favorite part of the whole thing is when Vince McMahon goes to the Mid-South Coliseum with his bodyguard, Pat Patterson, and sits ringside for the match between Jerry Lawler and that little referee.
Paul Neighbors.
Paul Neighbors. And the way Vince, you know, in his 90s three-piece suit, this jacked-up guy sitting in this little folding chair, and the way he trips Lawler and looks just so incredulous throughout. And then Lawler challenges him, smashes Patterson to the post, and Vince McMahon, you could not take longer to stand up out of that chair than Vince McMahon does, and could not take longer to peel off the sport coat. Giving enough time, of course, for Pat Patterson to grab Lawler and for Vince to lay in a sucker punch.
What did you think of the Memphis audience here and how Jerry Lawler was able to justify every one of his heel actions to this crowd that just ate everything up?
They seem kind of dumb, don't they? I don't, and maybe that's, you know.
You're spoken like a true northerner.
Yeah, where are you from, the Rotten Apple?
Hey, I support Abraham Lincoln and all of his accomplishments, but
Based on downtown Bruno's logic, I mean, we are the dumbest people because we are way north of New York.
Right, absolutely right. But no, I mean, doesn't it sort of come across throughout that thing as like a territory on its dying legs, and only the most gullible of fans are left in that kind of sad studio where they are, or, you know, there's not a lot of talent outside of Jerry Lawler and I guess Jeff Jarrett. Like, everybody just seems below grade in all facets there.
Again, smoking like a true Northerner.
I hope we don't have too many Memphis listeners here. I mean, I think it showed you the charm of a bygone era, yeah, where all of these territories were built. It was very much, you were so ingrained with the community, and they lived through some of these heroes for them. And you could look at Texas having the same kind of success. And in this case, in Memphis, I mean, these people lived and died through Jerry Lawler. And a lot of them were probably fans that had been coming there for years at this point, seen the heights of it. And you certainly were definitely a era removed from the glory period of Memphis, but it was definitely a throwback audience in 93, just the level of heat you got and their believability in the angles, and such an easy angle too, with the big bad Northern wrestling company that looks down upon these Southerners.
Yeah. Do you guys know if they did that show live to air on a Saturday morning or something like that? Because the way that
I believe it was live. Yes.
Yeah, Jerry Lawler throws to one of his softball buddies there to remind people that after the show's done, don't forget to come out to wherever the hell, Tennessee, and
Brighton.
See me and this guy playing a doubleheader. You know, we got a real tough matchup out there, but we need your help. You know, tickets are priced appropriately.
It wasn't just a wrestling audience. It was a family affair with Jerry Lawler. Last thing before we let you go here, of the supporting cast outside of Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler, who would you say would be the best supporting actor in all of this? Who was the guy that maybe surprised you watching this, whether it be playing a different character or just surprising you with a promo? Who stood out beyond the two focal characters?
For me, it was without a doubt Bret Hart. His, promo to the crowd at the Mid-South Coliseum after the match, where I think you could entitle it probably Disgraceville. I didn't know that Bret Hart had
Disgraceland
heel in him like that at that time, mm-hmm, or could even do that on the microphone in 1993. So I was pleasantly surprised by that, and so he kind of, like, that was probably inside of him for a long time. And, that side of the hitman or the character of the guy, and finally got to release it in 1997.
Yeah, which was, you could see a lot of parallels between those two angles, and that was an angle in 97 that really started to turn around, at least the WWF and their house show business at the time, and that was when you could see the momentum, at least of the show quality, turning for the WWF, and I'm sure there were, Bret drew upon kind of this almost a miniature version of that back in 93, where you were just playing off of these two different audiences and playing with characters on both sides of the fence. So I want to thank you very much, Mr. Fact Checker, for joining us here to chat about this. My last question is, what is going to be next for you? I mean, this was so closely identified with you. Is there going to be something else now that we're going to have to wait 8 years to review?
Are you going to change the avatar on the message
board? I have to change the bottom of all my posts now.
Oh wow.
It can't just be a series of GIFs of Vince McMahon in that studio in Stamford cutting tapes for USWA.
Wow. What
so
a
that's
change.
A very good question. This is really a culmination of a big part of my life. And I don't know whether to thank you or curse you. But I'm eternally grateful. I can't wait to hear the review. Although, who am I kidding? This show's live. Sorry. It was a great review. Way to go. And I hope everybody else likes it as much as I did, or even half as much as I did.
He is Hacksaw Jim Powers, a Hall of Famer on the Law message board, and a man that will be going through a major identity crisis over the next couple of weeks, as the Hacksaw Jim Powers of old will be a distant memory. So thank you very much, Mr. Powers, for joining us, and I am sure you will let us know if we got anything wrong on this show that is so close to your heart.
You bet.
Well, wait, how are we going to top that feedback? From Hacksaw Jim Powers himself.
We're just going to be let down with everybody from the board.
Oh, well, we couldn't do a review of McMemphis without Hacksaw Jim Powers.
Mm-hmm.
He's at a crossroads in life. What will be the next direction for the fact checker?
We will find out.
Well, we're going to follow that up with Irish Dave in Orlando, which sounds like it doesn't exactly mesh, but I guess Orlando Irish Dave, he writes in, these videos are fascinating. Growing up watching the WWF from 1993 until around 2009, Jerry Lawler had always been a great heel until he turned into a generic commentator. To see his role reversed and him cheered coming out to the Rocky theme is almost bizarre, but the crowds loved him and was great to actually see after reading so many stories about his popularity. Although Vince from this period was still known as the announcer, his clips here are very reminiscent of Mr. McMahon, where it seems he always had this character all along. Very strange to see Macho Man do the heel part, not so much Bret as he would perfect it in 1997. I wonder, will this footage ever appear on the network one day with better quality? Do you think this Vince heel character would have worked around this time in 93? A lot of questions there. On the network front, I feel that the Memphis tape library, it's really a mess. I don't know if they'll necessarily ever be able to lock down the rights because it just seems it's this maze of ownership and people claiming ownership to these tapes. And especially the quality, I think this is the best you're going to get. I mean, these were tapes that were...
Yeah, you'll probably get a little better than just like this VHS dub that you saw on YouTube. But we had a lot of these tapes at the Fight Network. At least, I believe we had Corey Macklin's tapes.
Yes.
Is that correct? And they weren't great quality. They weren't really high quality. I don't know if there are better versions that exist elsewhere, but maybe they can use their Criterion Collection renewal processes to restore a lot of this footage.
Yeah, the Memphis Library almost has the Trinity of Terror, as I will call it, in terms of the ownership is up in the air. They taped over a lot of stuff to just recycle the actual physical tapes. And C, I mean, if you feel the ECW tapes have really been affected by all of the commercial music on this, you're in for a rude awakening with Memphis, where you can air a ton of this stuff, the music videos, the entrances. A lot of work would have to go into these two.
But I mean, as far as the collection goes,
it's awesome. But
great wrestling history there. I mean, between this and the Andy Kaufman stuff alone, I think is worth it. But I'm sure it'll make its way into Vince's hands at some point.
I don't know.
Callum from Manchester, UK. What struck me when watching was not only was this the trial run of the Mr. McMahon character, but also whether it could also have been the template for the Hart Foundation's later dual roles of heels in the U.S. and babyfaces in Canada, with the same dynamic being played out in this angle, with the Memphis through and through, Lawler playing the face in the local territory, but cocky and not obnoxious heel on the national stage. The roles reversed with Mr. McMahon. I wonder if this was where the seeds were sown or if it was just a case of trying old school territorial tactics. Do you think Paul Neighbors was supposed to reveal that Vince was in his corner during that segment? The interviewer straight up called him out on it. Given the issues he had getting within shot of the camera, it wouldn't surprise me if it was a gaffe. Gotta love the way Lawler managed to subtly shill in each promo by constantly working in the date and venue of the shows.
All right. Certainly, you could see that this, while I don't know if one necessarily led to the other, definitely this kind of dual role was certainly kind of a microcosm of what you would see with the Hart Foundation angle and baby faces in one place and heels in the other and justifying that. Brad from Whitby, first of all, can I say how happy I am for Chris that you guys chose to review this? I think my biggest takeaway was how over Jerry Lawler was in Memphis, juxtaposed to his WWF character in 1993. I wish I could have just watched one of his matches at the Mid-South Coliseum. What an atmosphere that would have been. During the course of this review, I hope that John has delivered some Corey Macklin impressions because this guy had such a unique voice. I couldn't stand him at the start, but he grew on me.
Matt from London, Ontario. I find it very interesting that at this time they could still separate a regional product from what the rest of the country would see, and that the Memphis crowd could boo Bret Hart and Owen Hart and cheer Jerry Lawler despite what they have seen on WWF television. Do you think something like this could work today, or is it something we will never see again?
I think that so much of what made this work was the fact that you had that that long standing that Jerry Lawler had with the Memphis fans and in that territory. And I don't know if you could really replicate this to have that same kind of feel of kind of your hometown hero fighting against the evil empire that was the WWF at the time.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of see it anytime a baby a top heel goes back to his hometown, you know, where the guy will, I mean, I'm expecting it somewhat with Kevin Owens returning to Canada, coming up at the Survivor Series, or Montreal, where the guy will get cheered. Baby faces and heels are just kind of all over the place on their TVs anyway. So, you know, they want to go with more shades of gray. I feel like, I don't think you could find such straight up baby faces or straight up heels if they were to do this again. I feel like everything would sort of be in the middle.
Jesse from the Six, Memphis was lit in 93. Literally. Why was Lawler throwing flash paper around in everyone's face? Why is fire legal, but a chain is cause for a DQ? And what kind of heel burns his opponents, beat ups referees, and uses racist taunts? Non-rhetorical questions. What exactly was the WWF's relationship with the USWA at the time? Does the WWE own this footage? What was USWA's broadcast area? What was the unified title? Was it the Memphis and World Class titles combined? And lastly, why did they end the angle when they did? Was it because of Lawler's legal troubles? I think we answered almost all of these questions throughout the body of this review. The unified championship, it was when Lawler had, I mean, he was the Continental Wrestling Association champion out of Memphis, and they did the deal with the AWA where he won the title, but then they didn't work together again. But they claimed the unified title in Memphis, even though Lawler never went back to the AWA to defend that title. But everything else, I think we have answered throughout this show of all those questions.
Finally, we go to Christian Small, who says these videos were a lot of fun to watch, mainly because I think Vince was having a ton of fun doing it. What really stood out to me was how uncomfortable Jerry Lawler was as a babyface. Sorry, untouchable Jerry Lawler was as a babyface in Memphis. The guy has a stretcher match with the referee, hits five pile drivers on him, throws a fireball in his face when he's tied down, and he's still the most beloved guy in the promotion. Most of that screams heel to me. It was also really cool to see that clear divide of someone I knew was a babyface in WWE being the worst heel in USWA. Reminded me a lot of the Hart Foundation in 97. I think we can all agree that this was a less painful review than Heroes of Wrestling was.
All right, that's going to wrap up the show. A very fun one, Mr. Ting.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to 1993 Memphis, and some people could call this a miniature invasion, and that's kind of what the WWF was experimenting with another organization that was on a smaller platform but had some loose ties to the WWF, and that was ECW. And we are going to be reviewing In Your House Mind Games from September of 96 in Philadelphia, featuring some ECW appearances on the show from 20 years ago. This was also at one time the match that Mick Foley claimed was the best of his career. He has since gone on to put that honor with the Randy Orton Backlash match, but this was a hell of a main event, and in 2 weeks' time, we are going to be dropping this show, so you can tune in Friday, October 14th, for this review.
It also features the debut of Mark Henry facing Jerry Lawler.
What a seamless thread from one review to the other. Jerry Lawler welcoming Mark Henry to the World Wrestling Federation, just a month removed from the 96 Olympics in Atlanta. So that's going to be our review, In Your House Mind Games.
The 20th anniversary had just passed of this show.
It did, yes. And WWF owns the footage to this,
mm-hmm.
as you can watch on the network. That's going to wrap it up. Taking us out, I figured we could play for one more time, Way, Demolition Man.
You sure we have the rights?
Nope, I am not.
Okay.
So we'll find out how litigious Manfred Mann's Earth Band is as we end this edition of Review Away, and we will be back in 2 weeks, though if you're real fans, you'll hear us much sooner than that.
And furthermore, right in your own hometown of Memphis, you'll be exposed for the kind of king you truly are, a Burger King. Oh, yeah, that's real cute. So you're telling me you will be there Monday night at the Mid-South Coliseum?
You bet your jewels.
Well, I'll tell you this, Vince McMahon. Monday night, this Burger King is going to give you a whopper. What do you think of that?
If that's the case, I assure you it will not be a happy meal.
This wasn't in your plan. Don't mess around with the demolition man. I'm a walking nightmare, and that's a motor do. I kill conversation as I walk into the room.